What does the note say? Moni bent down and hauled his battered briefcase up on his knees and clicked the latches, lifted the lid, took out a clear plastic page protector with a color photocopy in it. The photocopy was edged with smudged black where the napkin hadn't filled the platen. It showed the creases and the grease stains and the pimpled paper texture, and a scrawled half line in Jorge Sanchez's familiar handwriting. 650 at $100K per. Bold, confident, forward-leaning, done with a blue fiber-tipped pen, vivid against the unbleached beige of the paper. 650 at $100K per. Moni asked, "What does it mean?" Reacher said, "Your guess is as good as mine." He was looking at the numbers, and he knew Dixon would be, too. The K abbreviation meant 1,000, and was fairly standard among U.S. Army personnel of Sanchez's generation, coming either from math or engineering school, or from having served long years overseas where distances were measured in kilometers instead of miles. A kilometer was nicknamed a click, and measured 1,000 meters, about 60% of a mile. Therefore, $100K meant $100,000. The per was a standard Latin preposition meaning for each, as in miles per gallon or miles per hour. "I think it's an offer, or a bid," Moni said. "Like, you can have 650 or something for $100,000 each." "Or a market report," O'Donnell said. "Like, 650 of something was sold at $100,000 each. Overall value, $65 million. Some kind of a fairly big deal. Certainly big enough for people to get killed over. People can get killed for 65 cents, Moni said. Doesn't always take millions of dollars. Carla Dixon was silent. Still, quiet, preoccupied. Reacher knew she had seen something in the number 650 that he hadn't. He couldn't imagine what. It wasn't an interesting number. 650 at $100K per. "No bright ideas?" Moni asked. Nobody spoke. Moni said, "What did you get from Franz's post office box?" "A flash memory chip," Reacher said, "for a computer." "What's on it?" "We don't know. We can't break the password." "We could try," Moni said. "There's a lab we use." "I don't know. We're down to the last attempt." "Actually, you don't have a choice. It's evidence, and therefore it's ours." "Will you share the information?" Moni nodded. "We're in sharing mode here, apparently." "Okay," Reacher said. He nodded to Nagley. She put her hand in her tote bag and came out with the silver plastic sliver, tossed it underhanded to him. He caught it and passed it to Moni. "Good luck." "Pointers?" Moni asked. "It'll be numbers," Reacher said. Franz was a numbers type of guy. "Okay." "It wasn't an airplane, you know." "I know," Moni said. "That was just Hicks stuff to get you interested. It was a helicopter. You know how many private helicopters there are within cruise range of the place we found him?" "No. More than 9,000. "Did you check Swan's office?" "He was canned. He didn't have an office." "Did you check his house?" "Through the windows. It hadn't been tossed." "Bathroom window?" "Pebbled glass." "So one last question," Reacher said. "You checked on Swan and sent the Nevada Stateys after Sanchez and Orozco. Why didn't you call D.C. and New York and Illinois about the rest of us?" "Because at that point I was dealing with what I had." "Which was what?" "I had all four of them on tape. Franz, Swan, Sanchez, and Orozco. All four of them together. Video surveillance. The night before, Franz went out and didn't come back. Chapter 33. Curtis Mawney didn't wait to be asked. He raised the lid of his briefcase again and took out another clear plastic page protector. In it was a copy of a still frame from a black and white surveillance tape. Four men, shoulder to shoulder, in front of some kind of a store counter. Upside down, and from a distance, Reacher couldn't make out much detail. Mawney said, I made the IDs by comparing a bunch of old snapshots from a shoebox in Franz's bedroom closet. Then he passed the photograph to his right, to Nagley. She studied it for a moment, nothing in her face except light reflected off the shiny plastic. She passed it counterclockwise to Dixon. Dixon looked at it for 10 long seconds and blinked once and passed it to O'Donnell. O'Donnell took it and studied it and shook his head and passed it to Reacher. Manuel Orozco was on the left of the frame, glancing to his right, caught by the camera in his perpetual state of restlessness. Then came Calvin Franz, hands in his pockets, patience on his face. Then came Tony Swan, front and center, looking straight ahead. On the right was Jorge Sanchez in a buttoned-up shirt, no tie, with a finger hooked under his collar. Reacher knew that pose. He had seen it 1,000 times before. It meant that Sanchez had shaved about 10 hours previously, and the stubble on his throat was growing back and beginning to irritate him. Even without the time code burned into the lower right of the shot, Reacher would have known he was looking at a picture taken early in the evening. They all looked a little older. Orozco's hair was gray at the temples, and his eyes were lined and weary. Franz had maybe lost a little weight. Some of the muscle was gone from his shoulders. Swan was as wide as ever, barrel-chested, thicker in the gut. His hair was short and had crept backward maybe half an inch. Sanchez's scowl had settled into a tracery of permanent, downturned lines running from his nose to his chin and framing his mouth. Older, but maybe a little wiser, too. There was a lot of talent and experience and capability right there in the picture, and an easy camaraderie and a mutual trust still floating on recent renewal. Four tough guys. In Reacher's opinion, four of the best eight in the world. Who or what had beaten them? Behind them, running away from the camera, were narrow store aisles that looked familiar. Where is this? Reacher asked. Mawney said, The pharmacy in Culver City, next to Franz's office. The guy behind the counter remembered them. Swan was buying aspirin. That doesn't sound like Swan. For his dog. It had arthritis in its hips. He gave it a quarter tab of aspirin a day. The pharmacist said that's a pretty common practice with dogs, especially big dogs. How much aspirin did he buy? The economy bottle. 96 pills, generic. Dixon said, At a quarter tab a day, that's a year and 19 days worth. Reacher looked at the picture again. Four guys, relaxed poses, no urgency all the time in the world. A routine purchase, a provision on behalf of a pet animal designed to stretch more than a year into the future. They never even saw it coming. Who or what had beaten them? Can I keep this picture? He asked. Why? Mawney said. You see something in it? Four of my old friends. Mawney nodded. So keep it. It's a copy. What next? Stay here, Mawney said. He dropped the lid of his case and clicked the latches, loud in the silence. Stay visible and call me if you see anyone sniffing around. No more independent action, okay? We're just here for the funeral, Reacher said. But whose funeral? Reacher didn't reply to that, just stood up and turned and looked at Raquel Welch's picture again. The glass in the frame was reflective, and behind him he saw Mawny getting out of his chair and the others standing up with him. When a seated person stands up, he slides forward to do it, so that when a seated group stands up, they all end up temporarily closer to one another than they were when they were sitting down. Therefore, their next communal move is to shuffle backward, turning, dispersing, widening the circle, respecting space. Nagli was first and fastest, of course. Mawny turned toward the door and set himself to thread through the limited space between the chairs. O'Donnell stepped the other way toward the interior of the hotel. Dixon paralleled him, small, deft, nimble, sidestepping a coffee table. But Thomas Brandt moved the other way, inward. Reacher kept his eye on the glass in front of Raquel, watched Brandt's tan reflection. He knew instantly what was going to happen. Brandt was going to tap him on his right shoulder with his left hand, whereupon Reacher was supposed to turn inquiringly and take a massive, straight right to the face. Brandt stepped closer. Reacher focused on the gold ring between the two halves of Raquel's bikini top. Brandt's left hand snaked forward, and his right hand eased back. His left hand had the index finger extended, and his right hand was bunched into a fist the size of a softball. Good, but not great, technique. Reacher sensed that Brandt's feet were not perfectly placed. Brandt was a brawler, not a fighter. He was hobbling himself about 50%. Brandt tapped Reacher on the shoulder. Because he was expecting it, Reacher turned much faster than he might have done and caught the incoming straight right in his left palm, a foot in front of his face, like snaring a line drive barehanded in the infield. It was a hefty blow, a lot of weight behind it. It made a hell of a smack. It stung Reacher's palm all the way down to the tendons. Then, it was all about superhuman self-control. Every ounce of Reacher's animal instinct and muscle memory dictated a headbutt to Brandt's damaged nose. It was a no-brainer. Use the adrenaline, jerk forward from the waist, plenty of snap, bury that forehead deep. A move that Reacher had perfected at the age of 5, a reaction that was almost mandatory a lifetime later. But Reacher held off. He just stood still, gripping Brandt's bunched fist. He looked into Brandt's eyes, breathed out, and shook his head. I apologized once, and I'm apologizing again right now. If that's not good enough for you, then wait until after this is all over, okay? I'll stick around. You can get a couple of buddies and jump me 3-on-1 when I'm not looking for it. That's fair, right?
Maybe I'll do that, Brandt said.
You should. But choose your buddies carefully. Don't pick anyone who can't afford 6 months in the hospital.
Tough guy.
I ain't the one wearing the splint here. Curtis Mawny came over and said, No fighting. Not now, not ever. He hauled Brandt away by the collar. Reacher waited until they were both out the door, and then grimaced and shook his left hand wildly and said, Damn, that stings!
Put some ice on it, Nagli said.
Wrap it around a cold beer,
O'Donnell said.
Get over it, and let me tell you about the number 650, Dixon said.
Chapter 34. They went up to Dixon's room, and she arranged the 7 spreadsheets neatly on the bed, said,
Okay, what we have here is a sequence of 7 calendar months, some kind of a performance analysis. For simplicity's sake, let's just call them hits and misses. The first 3 months are pretty good. Plenty of hits, not too many misses. An average success rate of approximately 90%. A hair over 89.53%, to be precise, which I know you want me to be. Move along,
O'Donnell said.
Then in the fourth month, we fall off a cliff and we get worse. We know that already,
Nagley said.